Hello, welcome to an all-new Marvel Cast, Explosion Network's hub of all things Marvel, a place to talk about everything MCU and beyond, from Avengers and Defenders to Corsair and Beak. My name is Ashley Hobley, your Omega level host, and joining me today is Ultimate Kieran Marchant.
Hi, I'm here to ruin so many things all at once, and don't understand how this movie could be included in any timeline whatsoever.
Also joining us, the astonishing Dylan Blight.
Oh, sorry, I forgot. Snick, snick.
Awful. So if you haven't worked it out, this is the first episode in our Mutant Rewatch. So we're going through all the Fox, X-Men, and X-Men adjacent films in the lead up to Deadpool and Wolverine. Do you guys have fond memories of the X-Men movies? The Fox X-Men movies?
No. No, I do not.
I do. I remember watching X-Men 1, 2, loving them growing up. Wolverine, two out of three of the Wolverine movies I think are pretty great, at least until I rewatch them inside their shit at this stage. I remember liking First Class quite a lot, watching the cinema. Yeah, I mean, I got, like, especially, like, but I would say X-Men 1 and 2, like, they came out when I was, like, what, 12, 13, something like that, probably. Like, they were really cool movies at times, so.
I mean, they're seminal superhero movies.
They were, those ones were alongside the Spider-Man.
I like them more than the Spider-Man movies. Oh, at least shit. At least at that time.
At that time,
I haven't watched them in a while, so. Find out soon.
Yes, so we're watching these movies in as close to a chronological order as we can. So I'll just run through. Okay. I'll probably have an article up about what order we're watching these in, but we're going X-Men First Class, X-Men Origins Wolverine, X-Men, X2, X-Men United.
Is it First Class is before? This is before First Class.
No, this is First. We're talking about First Class in this podcast. Because First Class takes place before X-Men Origins Wolverine. We will get into this. It is
it's not that
the
hard.
Bulk of the movie. The bulk of the movie takes place before the events of...
Let him finish the readout.
I'll let him finish.
Let me finish. X-Men The Last Stands. Then X-Men The Wolverine. Then we go to X-Men Days of Future Past, where the timeline gets reset. We will then watch X-Men Apocalypse, Dark Phoenix, and then Deadpool 2, The New Mutants, and finally Logan. And then eventually Deadpool and Wolverine.
I feel like Kieran's, like, watched these movies, he's seen the list posted, like, in Chanty, and now that he's sat down to record the podcast, he now is sitting there staring at his screen trying to make sense of what the fuck is going on.
No, because I've always, from everything, it makes, in my head, I guess I'm wrong then, but it always makes sense that X-Men, the Wolverine is before this.
It's not, though.
It's not.
I mean, the first opening credits is, but after that, it's not. It's set after.
Yes.
Like, the year it's set
in. Also,
in
every
after.
Timeline I'm currently looking at, Days of Future Past is before Wolverine.
Well, that doesn't make sense.
Just saying, in every list I'm currently looking at, Days of Future Past happens before Origins Wolverine does.
But
just to throw it out there and really fuck up the ordering while we're recording this podcast.
Well, technically, some of it does, but...
So we're doing the chronology. The events of the first three movies happened, right? They definitely happened. Yes. And then the Wolverine... Obviously, this happened before First Class happened. Yeah, and then Days of Future Past... happens after the events of the first three movies.
Yeah, no, but it links into this.
And after
so
First Class.
Into it, because the timeline splits at Days of Future Past.
Correct.
Correct.
But that's why Days of Future Past is technically before X-Men Origins Wolverine.
It is both before and after, but we're putting it after because it makes no sense.
Why would you watch it first? You got to watch like all the movies.
I'm just looking at every single chronological order. When I'm trying to correct myself because of my fuck up, it's also every other chronological order timeline I'm looking at has Days of Future Past.
I mean, technically, date-wise, that's the order it should be.
Technically, we should watch Apocalypse but first because it's got a bunch of it set before anything.
Oh, no, fuck off, Dylan. Fuck off, Dylan.
But it makes Days of Future Past, which some would argue is a high point of the series, would make the most sense in this order.
Right. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, and we're watching the Rogue Edition. I need to go out and buy the Blu-ray.
Oh, my God. It's just on Disney Plus. It's just all on Disney Plus.
No, just watch it. It's
not the Rogue Edition.
I tried to see if it was available to stream. It's not. But the Rogue Edition is the best way to watch the movie.
So after all that, let's jump into discussing X-Men First Class.
A new species is being born. Help me guide it. Shape it. Lead it.
Time for the tour.
Idea what I'd give to feel
normal.
You want society to accept you, but you can't even accept yourself.
Should we have to hide?
Tomorrow, mankind will know that mutants exist. They'll fear us, and that fear will turn to hatred.
Not if we stop a war. Not if we risk our lives doing so.
We have it in us to be the better men.
We already are.
The movie we're about to talk about. Please
I
be aware
feel like
really
I'm in
disgusting.
A fever dream because I swear this the introduction for this was for fucking Wolverine. I'm in a fucking fever dream, everyone.
Please be aware we'll be freely discussing anything and everything about the plot themes in any of the movie. So if you haven't watched X-Men First Class, come back later. Of course, it is streaming on Disney Plus. So let's talk about X-Men First Class. Release June 3rd, 2011. Directed by Matthew Vaughn. Screenplay by Ashley Edward Miller, Zach Zents, Jane Goldman, and Matthew Vaughn. Based on a story by Sheldon Toda and Brian Singer. Based on X-Men by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. Starring James McAvoy, Michael Fassbender, Rose Byrne, Jennifer Lawrence, January Jones, Oliver Platt, and Kevin Bacon. In the early 1960s... During the height of the Cold War, which takes place before the Vietnam War, a mutant named Charles Xavier meets a fellow mutant named Eric Lenscher. Despite their vastly different backgrounds, Charles grew up from a wealthy family, while Eric lost his parents at Auschwitz. The two become close friends. As the world teeters on the brink of nuclear war, Charles and Eric, with other mutants, join forces to save humanity. However, the situation soon tears their friends apart. Kieran, do you understand the timeline?
No, I don't, but it's fine. Carry on.
The Cold War, the events of this movie happened before the events of the Wolverine Origins. I will say, watching them both back-to-back, which we have for this recording session, it doesn't make
make a lot of sense, no.
There's a lot of...
There's a lot of really bad shit.
I found really good answers to a lot of the plot holes. Now, they are fan canon, fan reasons for a lot of the plot holes, but...
I think we'll probably save those for next week's episode.
I think the thing is, right, and maybe this is now my brain making sense of Days of Future Past being before X-Men Origins Wolverine, that fixes a lot of the fucking plot holes, like, immediately. Because you just go, fuck it. It's somewhere there by itself.
Yeah. So, Kieran, what do you think of X-Men First Class?
I'm, like, really mixed on this movie. I remember loving it when it came out. I think now watching it in 2024, looking back, this was released originally, 2011? I think looking back on it now, when we've had not every superhero movie since in the MCU or superheroes in general have been great, but I think we've had a lot that have been done really well. And I feel like this movie is caught in between the kind of mid to late 2000s superhero movie and then what we've grown accustomed to in the MCU especially. And I think this continues with just Fox, the same as Sony, not 100% getting what Marvel is doing by itself in the MCU. I think Fassbender, McElroy, and Jennifer Lawrence are all really, really good. Like, I think they are really well casted in this movie. I think their use of, I feel like in this movie, the script writers and the group themselves were maybe pushed a little bit in terms of finding which X-Men they could use or which X-Men they could bring on board, because of course it's the earlier setting for it. So you can't have Scott Summers yet. In theory, you can have Wolverine, but where does Wolverine sit in the picture? You can't have Jean Grey yet. You can't, like, a lot of these of the X-Men that we love are kids at that point in time. So I feel like it can be a little hit and miss on their use of some of the mutants throughout this. I think I hate how they use Emma Frost in this movie, because I think Emma Frost is one of my favorite X-Men antagonists, especially as her being kind of a more direct antagonist towards Xavier in terms of their abilities and her generally playing a really pivotal role in the written format of this franchise. But I think outside of this, the other thing that this movie is really hampered down by is it being really fucking Hollywood. Like, just having these really annoying Hollywood moments in it. Like, pause and then we need to go see an expert in mutations. And it's just like, what the fuck is... Like, why would anybody say it like that? Or just, like, bits and pieces. Like, why the... Like, the fact that within, like, 24 hours to 48 hours of Charles revealing himself, or what it seems to be a very short time period of Charles revealing himself to more people, all of a sudden you're telling me that Beast is suddenly made Cerebro out of fucking, very quickly in a small time frame?
No, he had always made Cerebro.
But why had he made Cerebro? Like, but there's no reason for him to have made Cerebro, because he didn't know that somebody with Charles Xavier's powers existed. So there's no reason for him to have built it yet. Like, it just, there seems to be a lot. And then another...
I don't know, they could have been G-Men before.
I just think, and then on top of that, there's like, I fucking hate how Darwin dies in this movie. It fucking hurts my soul every time I've watched
it. He's not dead.
Yeah, but he may as well be.
He evolved into pure energy and lives on as pure energy.
Oh, it's so fucking bad. It is so fucking bad. I think Kevin Bacon is... It is Kevin Bacon, right? Is the...
Yes, yeah, it is, okay. Kevin Bacon.
I was just making sure I didn't fuck up another actor's name. And I should have looked it up before we recorded this. Like, Kevin Bacon, I think, is a bit hit or miss. I think he's a really good antagonist directly into Magneto. But I don't love him throughout this entire movie. I think this movie tries real hard to be like, okay, we're going to be even closer to the comic books and to the X-Men that people love than we originally were with, like, the original movies. But yeah, I just feel like they don't fully commit, and that is part of the problem.
Okay. Dylan, what are your thoughts on First Class?
As I said, I really, really loved it when it first came out. I sort of, on the rewatch, I don't think it holds up quite as well. It's a bit of a mixed bag. I would say the movie has some of the real highs of the franchise and some of the lowest. Like, when it's sort of at its best, it's definitely just either James McAvoy or Michael Fassbender just acting. And then the lows are sort of, I would say, the other characters or the villain. I don't think holds up as well. I actually think Kevin Bacon and Daniel Jones are sort of like meh for a lot of this. Like, you've got Michael Fassbender and James McAvoy, who are, I feel like, really, like, committed and giving a lot to these characters, and then those two just come across as they're like, you know, one take, give it all, which I don't recall getting when I watched it the first time. But I mean, Nicholas Holt's also really good, and, like, shout out Rose Byrne, and Jennifer Lawrence is fine, whatever. Like, she's, like, not bad, but it's, like, just sort of, it's it's a performance.
It's not her best stuff.
Oh yeah, it's definitely not in the realm of her best stuff. And then, yeah, I think the final act of the movie is like fine, whatever. I think, yeah, when the movie's at its best, when it's just Eric and Charles talking, or Eric just wanting to kill Nazis and like a lot of small stuff. And then when it gets bigger scale, it's just sort of that's when it doesn't hold up for me.
It feels a lot like the third act of this movie is like, right, we now need to rush to there being a confrontation between Charles and Magneto. And by the end of this movie, we need them to have split up into their separate groups and gone their separate way, which I guess looking back at it, I wish they didn't do that so quickly and they'd waited till the next movie for the split.
Well, I mean, the thing with this movie has always been the story was that they, so obviously they did Origins Wolverine, and it was known at the time they were doing an Origins Magneto movie was the next planned one. And then apparently that got scrapped and half of the ideas from that got put into this film, apparently. So that's why I think you have a lot of Eric stuff and then, yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Again, that's the, like, half of that's, we definitely know, the other half is...
I also appreciate how much it humanizes Charles Xavier in this movie in terms of he isn't he isn't the perfect Charles Xavier that many people know later on from the later stories.
He gets drunk, he's a womanizer.
But like, it's not even that, it's more like how heavily flawed his view is on Mystique and their relationship, and how without him realizing he's putting on these expectations onto her and kind of forcing his kind of not quite connecting with what she does. And I like it. I don't think even whenever I think, is this the first, is this the iteration where Charles and Mystique have this sort of relationship? Like, I can't remember this appearing anywhere else.
Not really. No.
And I think...
Aware. Not in the comics, so I don't believe, yeah.
So it makes it more understandable when... she walks away from Charles and she moves and she agrees with Magneto's points, because it's like, you know, Charles never has to hide himself. Charles doesn't have to be somebody else to get around in the normal world. And it's a really interesting point for them to build on that as the movie goes through.
Yeah. I remember really enjoying it in cinemas, having a good time. I agree. I don't think it holds up as well on a rewatch, or just maybe it's just watching it in 2024. Like you said, the Charles Eric stuff is the best stuff in the movie. I think they did some really interesting stuff with making Charles probably not only like you said, like more relatable and like normal, but also making his telepathy like a more useful thing in the field. Whereas, you know, in the X-Men movies, it's like, I can hear their thoughts, or I just freeze everybody. You know, now he's like manipulating people in the field, or getting their point of view, or like seeing where people are and trying to get information gatherer. The person is weirdly the person in the chair, but he isn't in the chair yet. Yeah. You know, yeah, I think, you know, the villains are fine. I mean, you know, they're there to be adversaries.
I just got the image of I just remember the scene of, and I can't remember his actual name, but the devil mutant. Just dropping
Hazazel,
just dropping all of those guards, just
all the CIA agents.
All the CIA agents. Just, I'm like, this, what the fuck is this scene? Like, sure, we get it, he's dropping everybody to kill him, but like, what the fuck? Okay, sure.
What do you mean, what the fuck? He's getting rid of, that's the most time effective way to get rid of all of them. If you want to kill a bunch of people, let's drop them from a height, from teleporting, you know? Yeah, I mean, there are definitely some rough scenes. Like, the one that immediately comes to mind is the Beast most busy relationship is weird. They immediately got some sort of attraction.
He's
and then
creepy.
As soon as she shows up, I'm like, I'm making a cure. You're the key to it. Let me stick you with needles. And when he's in the process of sticking you with a needle, he's like, let's make out.
Yep.
Yep. It's very rushed. Like, it feels like this movie has the problem where it's like, all right, we need to form a bunch of relationships to then be able to break up said relationships later down the line, later in this movie. And I think, and that's the problem where I feel like Charles and Magneto's relationship is I always felt like it should be built up over a greater period of time, and it should be them together for a larger period of time. But this movie puts it as very much them speaking.
We were together for like a week.
A week.
It was like a pinnacle of my years, you know.
It's really weird because I know that like when they put this out, it was like, hey, we're going to do like a prequel trilogy. That was the plan from the get-go. Like all things, if all things go well, this will be a trilogy. So in the first movie, let's split up and make Charles versus Eric again straight away. I'm like, yeah, but that's what the other three movies were about. Like, wouldn't you break them up at the end of the third one?
100%. I agree.
Yeah.
Because even then, I think he gets to the point. Doesn't he get to the point in the second one where they are like working together? Or
in the
like
second
randomly...
one, they have to work together.
They always end up working together.
And it's that's just kind of dumb. It's
then you got like... the flashback scene where they get together to help take down Gene, even though they hate each other at the time and all these weird things. We'll get all to that.
It's an ongoing thing.
Also, that was after Charles died, but he's apparently alive, and that's never explained. Anyway, we'll get all to that.
We'll get to all of that. But yeah, I think, obviously, James McAvoy, massive Michael Fassbender, are probably the best part of this movie. I feel like it's helped them having something to base it off, performances, I feel like helped, and like have a place to go. I think it was a really bold choice to open the movie with that Auschwitz scene again. The concentration camp, which was obviously super effective in the first X-Men movie. And like to redo that and then expand on it was like a pretty brave choice. I think there's a lot of interesting stuff. There's like some really weird, like you probably wouldn't be able to get away with it now, like Rose Byrne just stripping down to a lingerie and walking to the Hellfire Club. Just the general misogyny, I guess, this movie. I don't know if it would fly in something being made right now.
I know, you've watched Matthew Vaughn's latest movie. Does it still fly?
She's wearing lots of clothes, so...
In Argyle?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's interesting. The thing that's interesting was interesting to me, and is probably not to a lot of people, is the casting in this movie is kind of crazy. You've got Jennifer Lawrence, who obviously goes on to become like pretty big. I don't know. I feel like this is
before... post Hunger Games.
Is it post Hunger Games?
Yeah. Well, at least like mid Hunger Games.
No, this came out before the first Hunger Games.
Oh, surely not.
Yeah, First Class 2011, Hunger Games 2012.
Fuck, they were filming. That means she was like probably filming at the same time. I didn't realize like
they're probably filming them at the same time.
Wow.
You got Nicholas Holt, who was probably still.
Well, here's my question for Nicholas Holt. Where didn't everyone learn Nicholas Holt from? Because I grew up watching Skins, so I've always known who Nicholas Holt was.
Okay.
And my any girl I dated in high school was like, he's the hottest guy ever, because they all love watching the show Skins. Now, Skins, Karen, I'm not sure, it's from the country, the United Kingdom, and it was a pretty popular TV series there.
Have you heard of it?
Have you heard of that? Or?
I don't think so, no.
Okay. Cool.
No.
Anyway, he was on the first 2-3 seasons. There you go.
No, this is probably the first thing I saw him in.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure for a lot of people, this is where they first saw him from.
Or, well, I guess, I would say I never saw About a Boy, but I don't think many people would have.
I would say a lot of people, if you lived in the UK, that was probably Skins. Those first couple seasons were super popular there. So a lot of those people probably knew Nicholas Holt, but outside that, Americans and whoever else, this
I think
is probably
I knew.
The first thing
I never
saw him
watched
in.
Skins because I always felt. When Skins was coming out, I was probably a bit young for it. But I definitely don't... I recognize his face. I think he has a very recognizable look to him as a person.
You got Zoe Kravitz.
Yep. Probably...
Who also goes on the Bigger Brother things.
Yeah. I mean, she's her family name's Biggs, but it's probably one of the earlier
things.
True. Yeah,
that's true. Caleb Landry-Jones, who is getting... more well known in these last few years.
Yeah, this is one of his. This is probably the first thing I was showing him was this. But yeah.
And then Lucas Till as well. He's been starring in the MacGyver TV show for the last few years, so you know, he's had reasonable success. And then even Edie Gathke, who plays Darwin, he's about to be Mr. Terrific in the Superman movie. So,
Oh, he is? That's him actually great Nicholas casting. Holt. That's really good casting, actually, for Mr. Terrific.
Yeah. So two members of First Class are going to be in the Superman movie. So yeah, kind of crazy. But, you know, Michael Vaughn has a talent for picking up, finding young talent. So that was the thing that I was thinking while I was watching this. I mean, all the training stuff is really fun. Like, I enjoy, like, the building up of this, the origins of the X-Men. You know, and I enjoy the Mystique Magneto relationship and his slow turning of her to, you know,
the origin of a meme. You know,
I was gonna say, I can't take
the origin of the meme.
I can't take that scene seriously anymore. Mm. Like, that meme has just ruined that entire scene, because I can just think of so many different versions of that meme format that have been created by that moment.
Mm.
I reckon 10 years from now, kids have seen that meme and have no idea it's from this movie.
Yeah, exactly, right? 100%.
That's Michael Fassbender. All right. Any other thoughts on anything else?
I will say, just based on the casting, I think it's impressive that they found two actors that could live up to the the roles that have been played by Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen. And, like, Fassbender and McAvoy do such a good job, both in their own right, where it's like, okay, if at the time, I guess, when you're looking at this as just a straight line sequel or a straight line prequel, you can see how these characters lead on to become McAvoy and to become, like, McKellen and Stewart in the future stories as well.
Yeah, I mean, even their casting is, like, pretty, you know, pretty out there picks, I guess. Like, McAvoy had done, like, Atonement and Wanted and stuff like that. And the Chronicles of Narnia. And Fassbender was probably best known for his role in Inglourious Basterds before that. But hadn't in Hunger. So, yeah. I think they're the key to this entire trilogy and that kind of stuff. Or the prequel series of films. And the real reason to keep watching them. So,
My tidbit for this is, I remember when they announced this movie, and I used to read Empire magazine a lot, and that's what I used to read, mostly film news, prior to the, you know, we got Twitter on our phones now and stuff, who needs it, but you used to read magazine, kids, like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So you used to
read magazines here and are like paper printed every month with like pictures on them.
Yeah, you'd buy them, they'd cost about $12.95, $11.95. You'd read the latest film news in them. Anyway, I picked up an issue when they announced this, and they talked about how First Class was being written by the Jane Goldman and it was being directed by Matthew Vaughn. And I remember just being like excited because I knew that that was coming off Stardust, which like Kick-Ass and everything. And I got to say, my hot tidbit when I was rewatching this is and seeing the credits and everything, I think Matthew Vaughn has had a huge decline. His movies, and also Jane Goldman, I think, has had they reach a high, like they do this, they have like a partnership, they do this, they do the sequel, even the first Kingsman, and then they fucking like
Kieran, what's the most marvelous moment of X-Men First Class?
I got my answer if you want me to go.
I don't think about, for me, it's not singular moments, I just love everything between Magneto and Xavier, like just in general, just how their relationship grows in this movie. Yes, it's done super quickly and it's done in a short period of time that it's annoying and wish it should be done longer. But I have a great appreciation for that relationship throughout this movie.
Okay, Dylan, what's the most marvelous moment?
When Wolverine says "fuck off."
That was a great cameo at the time. I do.
This is back when this is
1962, before the Vietnam War.
This is an exciting cameo. This is when cameos. I remember this being a fun cameo, and I'll tell you what, it still holds up in retrospective. This was still fun cameo before they feel like overstuffed and everything.
Wrestling terms, you would say it popped you.
Yeah, it did pop me. Rewatching it, I remember that's the first time they ever swore. It was like hearing Wolverine swear. And prior to getting Logan and everything, the R-rated movie and shit, like, at the time, we was like, this is the best we're going to get.
Of course we're going to get. I mean, to me, it's Magneto turning all the missiles back on the, you know, on the Russian and American armies, you know? That was cool, you know? obviously the turning point. Also, this is the movie I've learned the most about the Cuban Missile Crisis from. So I choose to believe a bunch of mutants stopped a bunch of Cuban missiles from being fired. And that's why the Cold War didn't, World War III didn't happen there. All right, I've got a new category for this mutant rewatch. Dylan, who is the mutant of the movie?
Who is the mutant of the movie? Magneto. Best character, best story, best arc. Best overall mutant of the movie, Magneto.
Karen, who's the mutant of the movie?
Yeah, I was going to say, I've got to say Magneto. I was almost going to say Mystique, but her costume design, I think, is fucking horrible in this movie when she is in, like, I just don't like the red wig when she is in her, like, natural form. So, no, wow. I have to go Magneto as well.
I'm getting proud, Karen.
She looked horrible. And even, like, Jennifer Lawrence said how terrible that, like, the situation around that whole thing is. But I just, yeah, it just didn't look good.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be Magneto. Is the key draw of the movie, and like the you know, he gets to show off his powers the best in this movie. You know, I mean,
Fassbender, good actor.
Yeah. So, all right, let us know what you thought of X-Men First Class by letting us know on Twitter by going to explosion.com/Twitter or jump to Discord at explosion.com/Discord. If you want to help us out here at All New Marvelcast, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or on Podchaser. Leave us 5 stars. And you can leave 5 stars or just tell people about the show. And if you've enjoyed this episode or what we're doing here and think it's worth a dollar, head on over to our Ko-fi page at explosion.com/support. All right, make sure you watch X-Men Origins Wolverine and join us next week for another All New Marvelcast.